Welcome to Indie Radio Garden. This week's highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
The first clip comes from WPEB 88.1 Scribe Radio Jubilee Voices Show. The kid hosts of the show are fourth graders of the Jubilee Elementary School. The students of the Jubilee School have been collecting oral histories and tales of courage and resistance as told to them by their community elders. On this occasion, the fourth graders interview one of their teachers, Cora Bannister, a Jubilee School graduate who recalls her interview with renowned Philadelphia drummer Leonard Gibbs, better known as Doc Gibbs.
Hello, West Philadelphia. Welcome to Jubilee Voices. Our special guest is Cora Bannister, and she is a graduate of Jubilee School. She is now a teacher at Jubilee. Leonard Gibbs, also known as Doc Gibbs, taught Cora African drumming. She will now be talking about her experience with him.
Hi, my name is Cora Bannister. I studied under Doc Gibbs for 2 years. And I graduated Jubilee back in 2015. Being one of his many students, I felt as though I was learning from like the best of the best. And despite me not knowing how to drum or any of my classmates knowing how to drum, I always felt as though he made us feel as though we were supposed to be drummers in the first place. Learning from him really gave me a sense of passion. Even though I wasn't particularly like interested in drumming, I feel like drumming was kind of like a symbolism to anything you're really passionate about, because we would be drumming, but we would also have conversations about like school and what we were doing on the weekends. And while we were drumming, I feel like it was kind of like a sense of comfort to him and to us also. We always looked forward to drumming on Thursdays. I remember that. On Thursdays, drumming with Doc Gibbs. And I don't want to speak for all my classmates, but I really do truly feel that like we really appreciated everything he did for us. And he was truly like a token in like my memory. I remember being like 4 years old, 5 years old, edgably in the preschool room and seeing like his truck pull up in the driveway and like all the big kids carrying the drums inside. And I don't know, I just feel like it's a sense of like, I think that sense of comfort, because Jubilee was kind of like a second home to everyone who went there. And I feel like all the staff and all the teachers who all taught there, they were kind of were like family. So Doc Gibbs was kind of part of like the Jubilee family in a way. And I felt as though the drumming was kind of like a gateway to learning deeper about our African culture, even though maybe not all the kids were African-American, but I feel like everyone truly appreciated what he did for us. And I feel like even though like we might not have been like drummers, he still made us feel as though we were like professional drummers, learning from like the best of the best. Like, oh my God, Doc Gibbs is here teaching us how to drum. He was on TV last night. Like, it was just really amazing to see the amount of love he had for all his students. I remember he always remembered everyone's name. Like, Doc was teaching at Jubilee for a super, super long time. He always remembered everyone's name. And I feel that made us feel really special in a way. Back in 2015, my sixth grade class and I honored Doc Gibbs for our Human Rights Day celebration. We honored him because he was so influential within the Black community. I feel like back then, me being like 11 and 12, like we didn't really understand that and really grasp that like that power that he really had in the Black community. But looking back now, like he really did a lot. Like I feel like people nowadays, like yeah, we hear drumming and music like mainstream music, but like there's no like really raw, authentic African drumming, and that's not really taken seriously within like music and culture as of today, I feel like. So him teaching like inner city youth, like raw, like real music, I feel like that spoke volumes. So yeah.
I started out playing when I was about 12 years old. And I used to take snare drum lessons at Girls High on Saturdays. So that meant that we would go, me and a couple of guys would go to Girls High, and we would see a drumming instructor who taught us sticking technique for like snare drum. And just a minute. And so that was my first introduction into the drum, although it wasn't the conga drum. I was introduced to the conga drum via high school, and I was in the high school band, and a friend of mine, one of the drummers in the band, had congas at his house. And so we would go to his house after school and we would play the drums, and we didn't really have any idea of technique or how to play the drum, but we knew that we were very much interested in what it was about. So that began my really interest, my first interest into the drum, the hand drum. And so I started studying the drum, just like you young folks are studying in school. I started studying the drum and studying with different masters, because we're very fortunate here in Philadelphia that we have a large community of hand drummers and a rich history in the hand drum. And most people don't realize that the drum was banned in this country for a long time. It was banned in a lot of countries where enslaved Africans were taken, because the slave master felt that there was a message that was being transmitted via the drum. And that message told the slaves when to revolt. And this happened many times. And one of the most famous times is the Nat Turner Rebellion. And that rebellion was spurred on by the drum calling the people and letting them know it was time to revolt, to fight for your freedom. So the drum has a very strong relationship to this country, in that it was banned, but many years later, I was born and other hand drummers were born to play the drum that was essentially banned. Country. So many years of studying the drum and percussion instruments and the history about the drum led me to be able to go and take my talents out on the road and play with very famous musicians. And the very first one that I played with was from Philadelphia. His name was Grover Washington Jr. He passed on. He's a very famous saxophonist. And that was my first big job, playing on the road and traveling all around the world. So other people that I've performed with, Anita Baker, Erykah Badu, Bob James, probably most of these people you've never heard of, maybe Erykah, that's about all, I guess. And then, about 18 years ago, I was fortunate enough to become the musical director for a cooking show on the Food Network, and that show was called Emerald Live. No longer comes on, but it was a very well-known show in the beginning of the Food Network experience. And after the Food Network, I continued doing educational things around Philly, and I found my way to Jubilee. By way of Jubilee, coming to World Cafe for a performance called Bridge Connections. And so I met Miss Karen, and Mr. Mike, and a few other people that aren't here. And then I ended up here at Jubilee, and I've been here ever since. So that's my story. All the way up to today, here I am at Jubilee. So we have any questions? Oh, we have a lot of questions. We'll start with you.
Why do you want to be famous?
I didn't want to be famous.
Why do you want to school your drum thing? called Girls High.
Well, that's, Girls High was a high school. At Broad and Alney was a school just for girls. I don't know if they still have
it. There.
It's still there. So that's how I ended up at that school. They had lessons at that school on Saturdays. All the way in the back. All the way in the back. With your hand. Yeah, you.
Who inspired you to become a drummer?
Who inspired me? My mother. Because my mother always liked to watch the jazz drummer. My parents really loved jazz music, and they introduced me to jazz music. But my mother, even when she was carrying me in the womb, she always watched the hand drummer. She was really into the drums. So I guess that kind of made its way to me. Yes?
Did you like working with other
people? Yeah, I love working with other people because, you know, when you work with other people, you have to come together and everybody has to work together to make the music. So it's very important that we all are used to working together. Yes?
Was it hard making all those albums?
No. Sometimes it's hard, but you know, you have to really listen to the music and figure out what's going to go where and what parts work. Yes?
Do you think you are at the highest point of your career, or do you still want to like keep going?
Oh, I want to keep going. I don't think I reached the highest yet, but I want to keep going. We'll see what happens. Lena.
Why did you start drumming?
Why? Well, you know, sometimes you find out early on that there's something that draws you to it. You know, sometimes you might be drawn to singing right away, or drawn to doing art. Well, I was drawn to playing the drum, because even when I was a little boy, I always would bang on things. I started out banging on the table at breakfast and dinner. My mother used to say, you know, the table's for eating and not playing. I said, yeah, I know, Mom, but I need a drum to play. So until you get me a drum, I'm going to have to play on the table. So that's how it started. Yes?
Are you still famous now?
Excuse me?
Are you still famous now?
Well, you know, famous is really in other people's minds, you know, because I didn't start out to be famous. And famous, I mean, well-known, people know me. So, you know, they don't stop knowing me, you know. So, in terms of people knowing me, people still know me. I still give respect.
I want to second that when people hear that Doc Gibbs teaches drumming at Jubilee School, they are so impressed, and they say how lucky you guys are to have Doc for a teacher.
Wow. Must be giving out money these days. Julius in the back.
What still inspires you to this day?
What inspires me? Well, what inspires me is looking out and seeing all of you young folks and me being able to come and teach you, because I know if I teach you something, you're gonna remember. You're gonna remember something. And when you get older, you might say, yeah, you know, this Doc Gibbs, he taught us at school and taught us this rhythm, and it came from such and such. So, you know, being able to touch each and every one of you with some of my information inspires me.
The second audio comes from the WRLG LP 92.9 Germantown Live Enrichment Center. On the show, Vanessa's Money Hour, host Vanessa Lowe talks about registering wills and shares a public hearing to help understand the process by Tracy Gordon for Register of Wills from Philly.
Welcome to Vanessa's Money Hour. I'm your host, Vanessa Lowe. Today is going to be very interesting. I have been a little bit down a rabbit hole. A friend sent me a link a couple of weeks ago with a mutual friend who was testifying for city council about her experience with Tangle Title. And part of going to watch that testimony, I learned about a new program that our Register of Wills has created to try to help low-income people deal with that exact problem. And I tell you, she seems pretty amazing. So in today's show, you're going to hear directly from the Philadelphia Register of Wills. Her name is Tracy Gordon. And she won that office, being the Register of Wills, from an incumbent who'd served the role for 40 years. Anyway, yeah, you can find more details about the Register of Wills at phila.gov and then search for Register of Wills. October was National Estate Planning Month. And the reason that this is associated with that is because the tangled title issue is so tied up with people not creating wills. And Tracy Gordon, our Register of Wills, is on a mission to get folks to get their wills done. She was a guest lecturer at Assistant Professor Nyron Crawford's class at Temple University very recently. And you're going to hear that lecture now. Enjoy.
I'm delighted today to invite a guest speaker, Register of Wills, Tracy Gordon. Last class, we talked about the importance of housing as it relates to inequality, and Register Gordon has been a part of some significant initiatives in the city of Philadelphia to help correct what we call table title. As I noted in the last class, when we talked about housing, most Americans carry their wealth in the form of homeownership. And there are considerable racial disparities in terms of who owns homes, the equity they're able to accumulate in that housing stock, right? And we saw in the video, the house we live in, some of the racial dynamics that forbid or preclude people of color from actually owning homes. So those dynamics have had generations, decades of challenges as it relates to perpetuating poverty and inequality, particularly both in American cities as well as in American suburbs. So some of the initiatives that Register Gordon has undertaken has been to correct some of these challenges as it relates to wills and testaments, how people pass their wealth through housing down from one generation to another. So please join me in welcoming Register Will, Tracy Gordon.
Thank you all. I had told a few of you all who were here early that this is very humbling because I graduated from Fox School of Business with a major in risk management and insurance back in 1994. I was a single parent with four children, and I was just determined to get my education and pull myself up by the bootstraps after having gone through a bad divorce and trying to navigate a life for my children that where they could not just survive but thrive. And as a result of that, I won all these scholarships from the Risk Management Insurance Department to the tune of about $12,000. And it enabled me to purchase my first home in Southwest Philadelphia, where I ended up raising my kids, who are all grown now and independently on their own. And I owe a lot to Temple University just for the opportunity for someone that's coming out of being a single parent and on public assistance. And they really supported me. And I always wanted to come back here for some reason. And I guess I'm proud to say that I'm coming back as an elected official. But my journey never had that intention. My journey was just to be a good mother, a good citizen, and be able to provide for my children. And when you know in Philadelphia, when you buy a house in Philly, it's hard for you not to be political. And so I started off as a block captain because I wanted my kids to grow up in a safe neighborhood, drug-free, where people had gardens and flowers and they cared about their property. And I'm close to going on 25 years as a block captain now, and my block was voted twice as the most cleanest block in the city. And subsequent to that, I ended up running for committee person. And I served as a committee person on and off for close to 20 years. And I just became sort of like an activist, like speaking up truth to power, just fighting for people that normally don't have the power to fight for themselves. So I hope as political science majors, you all will consider, you know, becoming block captains and committee people and becoming the voice of people who normally, you know, maybe scared or maybe they have some trauma in their life and they just don't know where to start. So I start becoming like the neighborhood information person. And I did ran for a couple offices like two or three times. And 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to run for an office that had been overseen or the late Ron Donatucci had been in the Register of Wills office for over 40 years. And I actually won by surprise with a quarter of a million votes. And it was just overwhelmingly, I became the first woman and the first black ever to hold this office in the history of Philadelphia. This office is one of the most important offices in the city, hands down, because this office is responsible for overseeing the transfer of generational wealth. When somebody dies in your family, the first place you need to come to is my office, is the Register of Wills, with a will or without a will, because we will be able to navigate you through a process that's easy with a will and maybe tedious without a will. But nonetheless, you need to come to the Register of Wills. Not the mayor, not your city council person, not your state rep. You come to the Register of Wills in order to get the paperwork you need to be able to get the assets that you feel that you inherited or whatever the will says. And so before I get to going more into detail what we do at the Register of Wills, we're going to lighten it up. We started a series called The Register Reacts, and I wanted to show you an episode of this new series where we take popular TV and film scenes that discuss estate planning and generational wealth, and then my solicitor and I, we watch and react to it. So enjoy. Hi, I'm Tracy Gordon. I'm the Register of Wills here in the city of Philadelphia.
Hi, my name is Sharon Wilson. I'm the solicitor for the Register of Wills here in Philadelphia. The solicitor is the attorney for the office.
We're here to watch some videos on the Register Reacts, and I'm your register.
I've been very busy. I haven't had a chance to look at video. So if I have to look at video today, it'll be fine.
Whoa, I am pretty sure you shouldn't have a weapon at work.
Literally everything is a weapon, son. That folder in my hands is far deadlier than this bow in yours.
Oh, that's probably true. So Leslie and I just finished putting together our will, and she wants you to be the witness. You mind signing it?
That's your will? You need that many pages to say, give my stuff to my wife?
See, that's exactly why people get so afraid. When your will looks like Encyclopedia Britannica, then it really does discourage people from just putting down the essentials that they need.
So a will is just like your insurance to protect your generational wealth. This law is in the state of Pennsylvania gives you the right to decide who inherits your assets, as opposed to when you don't leave a will and it has to come down, and I as a registrar have to interpret the law as to who these heirs are and as to how these assets are going to be distributed.
It's a complicated legal document.
Doesn't have to be. I've had the same will since I was 8 years old.
Hilarious. Well, first of all, you can't have a will at 8 years old. Wills are invalid until you turn 18 years old. It's funny that he had it folded up in his wallet.
If you can fit your will into a wallet, it's probably a little bit too short, and you need a little bit more to it than that.
Something can happen to you, and, you know, you could lose the will. We always say that the best thing to do once you get your will drawn up is to put it in a very safe place where someone needs to know where it is.
Upon my death, all of my belongings shall transfer to the man or animal who has killed me. What are these weird symbols?
The man who kills me will know.
I do know what Ron's symbols mean, and I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Okay, you should really have a will that's more than one sentence long. You have a wife and kids now. I could introduce you to our lawyer.
The three most useless jobs in the world are, in order, lawyer, congressman, and doctor. Pass.
Well, I don't know how useful your lawyer is to you, but I do know getting married or having children is a great motivation for coming in to write a will or to get an existing will changed.
Although in the state of Pennsylvania, it's not required that you have a lawyer to help you do your will, but that is a best practice and recommendation from me as a registrar of will.
Ron, that document is nothing. It's not even notarized. You know, if you die and you don't have a real will, most of what you own will go to the government.
Where is this lawyer you speak of?
Well, that's not necessarily true. The only way the government will take your assets is if they can't find any heirs to your estate. And that's why you leave a will. And inheritance taxes, whether or not you probate the estate or bring in a will or not, you are going to be hit with the inheritance tax, and a penalty accrues on it if you don't pay the inheritance tax within 9 months of the death. The inheritance tax is calculated based on the value of what is transferred and the relationship of the person receiving the asset to the person that died. Transfers to spouses are tax-free. The revenue is used for our schools, our roads, our infrastructure, and is also used for libraries. Ron?
Hey, Trevor. I've been talking to Ron about estate planning, and he is here to do some goodwill hunting.
I got a number. How do you like them apps?
He has to draw up a new will, so.
Yes, I understood, yeah. Mr. White. Thank you. As I've said before, I just don't like puns.
I thought that was kind of funny.
Let's begin by filling out this form listing your assets and liabilities.
Nice try.
If you don't let your lawyer know what assets you have, what liabilities you have, then no, you will not be able to put together a will.
I'm not telling you how much money I have, where it's hidden, or which precious metals and or gemstones it may or may not take the form of.
Boy, have I dealt with this before. If you make the decision to draft a will, pick someone that you trust. Because when you go to your attorney, you really do need to disclose all of your assets and perhaps some personal things that you don't normally talk about, but it really does help to produce the best document when you know the most information.
If you don't give me the information I need, there's nothing I can do. Oh, come on, Trevor. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Because it's important to tell your attorney everything about your estate.
Yes, sir. I
will. It's not a guessing game.
Unintentional. I don't even need an exact number. Just ballpark it. That's all I need to get started. Or I'm sure the state government would love to use your money to hire more bureaucrats, maybe build a library.
Fine.
How do you make a will? You start by thinking about what the world would look like if you weren't there. And then you start by making a list of your assets. And then the next simple step is think about who you would want to have what you now have.
Holy Is this a joke?
Another word for jokes is lies. I do not lie, therefore I do not joke.
You do need to list all your assets. You do need to let your attorney know everything about anything that you think you own. Best practice, again, is to ask the lawyer to make it a self-proven affidavit. A self-proven affidavit is when you have two witnesses there in front of your lawyer. You sign your will, they sign it. And so whenever your executor brings that will to our office once you die, because we don't see the will until after you die here in the state of Pennsylvania, but once they bring your will to us, they won't have to go find the witnesses.
This is going to take some time. Trusts need to be drawn, tax shelters.
That's enough. I do not need some drawn-out legal expedition to tell me what I knew when I was eight.
He's right. You don't have to have a long, legal, complicated document. Your attorney should be able to translate your estate, no matter how large it is, into simple language that you understand. There's no need to leave the office with a document that you can't even read.
What are all these symbols?
I was right not to be threatened by you.
I can add symbols to your will if you like.
When you don't have a proper will, you leave your estate in what's called intestate. And that means that the registrar wills, or I would have to determine who your heirs are, and it has to be proven. You have to come down to our office and prove to you that you are the heir of these properties, and we have to go through what they are called citation hearings, and then I would rule on who is the best person to administrate the estate and who the heirs are.
Yeah, when you don't work everything out and you don't have a will, a proper will, then what might happen is but the state in which you die already has a list and a will made out for you, because they just don't believe all of you are going to get around to it.
Thanks for joining us. My name is Gladys Nobrega from the Scrap Project. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio Project production.